This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. I'm your host, Karen Vergara, a senior journalist at Financial Standard. Experts say that alternatives and real assets are the calm amidst the storm of market volatility and turbulence, helping investors minimize downside risks and protect their capital. With 2026 already taking off with a bumpy start, perhaps investors need to consider the role alternatives can play in their portfolios. Jeremy Hall, the Managing Director and Head of International for Brookfield Private Wealth, takes us through an outlook for alternatives and how investors can stay the course during these unpredictable times. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Karen. It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting Brookfield to speak with Financial Standard today. It's really our pleasure to be here.
Firstly, Jeremy, tell us about your role at Brookfield Private Wealth and an overview of the business.
Thanks, Karen. Well, look, Brookfield has a unique heritage. We started investing in private markets over 125 years ago with our first investment in infrastructure dating back to 1899. In São Paulo, in an infrastructure business called the Tramway Light and Power Company. Over the years, Brookfield has grown rapidly, focusing on primarily real assets and credit, and today is one of the world's leading alternative asset managers with $1 trillion under management, only one of two firms today that have grown to this scale. In terms of Brookfield's history, we are a value investor, focusing primarily in private markets. In the last 30 years, we have morphed into a traditional asset management firm, investing our own capital alongside both institutional and private wealth capital. But really, our origins were starting out as a principal investor in private markets. But to this very day, that principle remains the same. And we still invest large-scale capital in our own funds alongside our institutional and wealth investors. There are really three things that have remained constant for us, and that is really leveraging our operating expertise to improve assets that we invest in, and we run those assets day to day with over 250,000 operating employees. Scale. We believe in private markets. It requires scale to be able to access large sums of money and invest in private market opportunities, and global reach, the ability to invest in over 30 countries around the world to uncover unique investment opportunities. In terms of my role that you mentioned, I look after the wealth business for Brookfield and oversee our engagement with wealth firms across Asia Pacific, Europe, and the Middle East, bringing private markets to financial advisors and their clients.
Jeremy, let's look down the crystal ball of 2026 for a second. And what are you seeing in terms of key headwinds and tailwinds for the alternatives and infrastructure, these asset classes that you look after?
As we enter 2026, the global macro backdrop is becoming more constructive. We're seeing inflation is easing, rates have likely peaked, and visibility is improving. And that clarity has started to support more transaction activity across private markets as investors gain confidence in valuations and deployment. That said, investors, we feel, are confronted today with elevated valuations in traditional public markets, with many commentators suggesting a potential pullback over the next 12 to 18 months. To that end, into the end of last week, we saw precious metals, which were a safe haven in 2025, see huge price falls over the last 2 days of last week after very strong performance in 2025. Intraday, we saw gold down some 12% on the 30th of January, the biggest intraday decline since the 1980s, and silver down a record 36% intraday last Friday. Those falls continued into this week, so maybe an unwinding here of sought-after safe haven assets. With regards to private markets, alternatives continue to benefit from strong structural demand, with major themes underpinning private markets over the next couple of decades. The main headwinds we would see today around really selectivity, execution, and leverage not being the kicker that it was to private market returns over the last decade. capital certainly is more discerning, underwriting standards are higher, and not all assets will perform equally. Liquidity expectations also need to be factored in, but overall, we think the balance and opportunities are favourable for private market alternatives going forward.
Absolutely. In terms of the gold and the silver whiplashing, that was just breathtaking. I just couldn't keep up. And on those notes, Jeremy, if we could extend those a little bit, what are some mega trends that you'd like to share in terms of powering demand?
Karen, we see three major mega trends driving private markets, and specifically, we would say the opportunity around the infrastructure asset class globally. At Brookfield, we've dubbed it the infrastructure supercycle, which is really driving significant investment opportunities, which we estimate is something to the tune of $150 trillion investment opportunity over the next couple of decades. But the first one is decarbonization, the energy transition, which requires enormous amount of investment in renewable power, grid modernization, storage, and electrification. And this is one of the largest capital redeployments we'll see over the next decade. And the next would be digitalization. Clearly, again, a lot of headlines around the adoption of artificial intelligence, but the real key nexus to artificial intelligence is around data consumption, continues to grow exponentially, driving demand for the physical infrastructure that supports the adoption of artificial intelligence. And it's both capital intensive and technologically complex. If you consider that the amount of data generated doubles every 18 months, and therefore you need more infrastructure to process, store, and transmit data. And then the last one would be around deglobalization, which is changing supply chains, which are driving increased demand for logistics, transport, and local energy infrastructure. We think this is a multifaceted opportunity for infrastructure. It's really about debottlenecking our existing supply chains, rethinking existing supply chains to bring critical industries closer to home and ensuring energy security.
And so when we talk about these things, Jeremy, which sectors or regions are compelling investment opportunities when we talk about these asset classes?
So from a sectoral standpoint, Karen, AI infrastructure. So we talked about artificial intelligence, but the infrastructure to support it. So building on what I mentioned earlier, the AI revolution really is an infrastructure story. It requires, in our estimates, around $7 trillion to build out data centers, chips, and power over the next decade. That, to us, is a huge opportunity that will require significant sums of capital to support it. Renewables or clean energy, which is a related nexus to artificial intelligence. So the need to power the artificial intelligence story. It is the cheapest bulk form of electricity generation today. Energy security, increasing demand for electricity from that digitalization theme, and the electrification of major industries will continue to result in increasing demand for renewables.
And in terms of the role, touching on infrastructure again, as a core allocation during this turbulent period, what can you tell me about that?
Look, I think the current environment, Karen, reflects the importance of infrastructure as an asset class and investments. It really is a diversification play and a stabilizer to portfolios. The benefits of the infrastructure asset class is regular, reoccurring, and stable income, inflation protection if we do see inflation pick up in 2026, and lower volatility outcomes compared to traditional markets like equities and bonds, as we've seen that volatility persist over the last couple of years. It does provide higher return potential than traditional bonds over the longer term. And unlike equities that really are more dependent on market sentiment or earnings multiples, infrastructure really has revenues that adjust with inflation and help preserve real-term purchasing power over the long term.
Given what we had just all talked about, Jeremy, how relevant is the traditional, quote-unquote, 60-40 portfolio / allocation in this context? Like, where do alternatives fit in to that model?
Karen, the traditional 60-40 portfolio was a construct, or is a construct, that has been debated. It was built for a very different market environment than what we're in today, where bonds were reliably offset equity risk and provided income. today that relationship is less dependable. And I would draw on an example as recent as the calendar year 2022, where we saw inflation and interest rates both soar in unison. And that was a year where we saw negative returns for both traditional equities and bonds. During that time for alternatives, we saw that alternatives and private markets really were a safe harbor, providing stable, predictable returns and income, like infrastructure, which really decoupled from traditional public markets and provided lower correlation outcomes and stability for investor portfolios.
In terms of, I guess, for the many advisors that listen to this podcast, what are the practical considerations for them and other investors, of course, that you can share with them in terms of, say, for example, portfolio construction, access to these vehicles, you know, investor suitability and return expectations and whatnot? What would you share with them on that front?
Karen, I think it's a really important question and one that advisors and investors should contemplate a few key principles. First, portfolio construction matters. Alternatives should be sized appropriately and diversified across asset classes and different strategies. Secondly, we would say manager selection is critical. Outcomes do vary widely in private markets, so experience, long-term track records, and alignment of interest is key. Thirdly, the structure needs to match an investor needs and risk tolerance. Different vehicles offer different liquidity profiles, risk return characteristics, so suitability and expectations should be clear from upfront. And most importantly, we would say education. Really important for the reason why alternatives are being used in a portfolio. To that end, Brookfield have developed the Brookfield Private Wealth Alternatives Institute, which is really focused on education. We have a website, which is a digital destination for just understanding private markets, allocations, the different role alternatives play in a portfolio. So we would say a combination of those factors really should be taken into account when building alternative exposure to a portfolio.
That's excellent. I'll check out the Brookfield Private Wealth Institute. Is that something that just launched recently or?
Karen, that's an initiative that Brookfield launched about 3 to 4 years ago support the adoption of alternatives or private markets by financial advisors and their clients.
And finally, Jeremy, anything else you'd like to add that I may have missed in this conversation or anything that our listeners would want to know in terms of investing in alternatives and real assets and infrastructure?
Karen, I think just to tie it all together, we would say that we're in a period where long-term fundamentals matter more than short-term noise, which we see day-to-day in markets. Alternatives, in particular asset classes like infrastructure, offer investors access to essential long-duration assets supported by very strong structural trends that we discussed earlier. And we feel that private markets thoughtfully integrated alongside traditional equities and bonds can play a really meaningful role in client portfolios, particularly in this environment, offering resilience, income generating options, as well as options that are better suited to the current investment environment.
Awesome, Jeremy. Thank you so much for your time. We learned a lot today and we really appreciate your time.
Thanks very much, Karen. It was a pleasure to join Financial Standard.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.